SDU. And there it was. His sobriety stung like a snapped rubber band. Maybe not, but this weekend went well. Smith didn't dump a barrel of guilt on me or push for anything unfair. She mentally tested out Colton Cabot Smith for the 30th time in 15 minutes. We got along great.
You sure did.
She blinked at his tone. If you're jealous, then maybe we should work out our own stuff.
What stuff?
Stuff like, I can't stop thinking about what happened last weekend, or why can't we give this a shot? She wrapped her arms around his waist, her nose brushing against his chin, and then kissed his neck beneath his jaw. It's Saturday night. Colt's asleep. The house is clean. I have to work tomorrow after Smith goes to the airport. Right now, I just want to be with you. After that, we can take it one day at a time. Ian tightened his hold on her, one hand behind her head, the other on her butt. He kissed her so hard and swift, she lifted onto her toes. Is that a yes? Her heartbeat thumped like a happy puppy's tail. He nodded, kissing her again. She could only assume that every bit of envy or possessiveness due to Smith's presence spurred his reckless about-face. Didn't matter. Right now, she'd take what she could get and have faith that everything would work out. Let's go to your room so we can be noisy, she winked, clasping his hand and leading him upstairs. They fell onto his bed, their hungry hands quickly undressing each other in between kisses and fondling and murmurs. Ian's breath heated her cheek and neck. Urgent kisses fueled her desperation to be closer, as if she were feeding off his need for her. Skin-to-skin friction sent goosebumps tumbling across her body until she became sweat-soaked. He set his teeth to that tender spot where her neck and shoulder joined and bit her, sending sharp pleasure tripping along her nerves. His eyes remained open, watching her, demanding a connection, wrenching emotions out of some hidden corner of her heart or brain or lungs or wherever it was that those vulnerabilities were stored. Arousal flooded her heart with excitement and with trepidation about her defenselessness. She groped his back, the sheets, dug her heels into the mattress, anything to gain purchase and brace against the waves of pleasure. Their climax shattered her, body and soul. Unlike the superficial gratification she'd known with other men, including Smith. As she lay there, breathless and overwhelmed, with Ian's body covering hers like a warm blanket, she held back the tears that would expose the unfamiliar, hot, sticky feelings boiling over like caramelized sugar. She closed her eyes, memorizing this feeling, this moment of connection, the comfort in the dark, the sound of his heart beating in her ear, the scent of their coupling, and the sheer warmth of his being. I'll miss you, he kissed her, stoking so much want. Then stay longer. Her impish remark could not keep her heart from sinking when he didn't concede. He rolled onto his back and tucked her body against his while gently tracing the line of her hips and waist with his work-roughened hand. Despite the exhausted satisfaction seeping from her pores, she sensed his building tension. What's going on in your head? Rather than meet his gaze, she walked her fingers down the ladder of his abs, hopeful he'd open up. He grabbed her fingers and kissed the tips. Being with you makes me happy. Her heart lit up like a birthday cake with 50 candles. Then why do you look sad? He shrugged.
I'm being selfish.
It's not selfish to allow yourself to be happy, Ian. We're not hurting anyone. He kissed her head again and tightened his hold.
I wish I foresaw a better outcome.
She propped up onto her elbow, patting the bedding all around him, as if searching for something. Where is it?
Where's what?
His brows knit in confusion. The magic eight ball or crystal ball or whatever voodoo trinket you've got that's showing you the future. When she chuckled, he wrestled with her, pinning her to the pillows. He pulled back and stared at her. Then planted a kiss so tender it made her want to cry.
I never expected this. You. I hate to leave.
So stay. You know I'm a disaster without you.
You have everything you need, here and here.
He placed two fingers at her temple and then lowered them to her breastbone. You mean my dirty mind and my tatas, she joked.
Those two.
He grinned, then rolled onto his back and stared at the ceiling. She needed a quick fix to rescue the night from his darkening mood. I have a plan. Her pronouncement got his attention. When you get to Jacmel, locate the best area for self-service so we can keep in touch with FaceTime and daily phone sex. When Ian chuckled, his eyes turned the golden green of a Bartlett pear and crinkled around the edges.
I'll pitch a tent by the nearest cell tower.
Nice pun, she chuckled. But deep down, she knew that keeping these feelings alive with so little contact would be difficult, if not impossible. Then again, Gentry thrived on proving people wrong, and she was determined to prove everyone wrong where she and Ian were concerned. She nestled back into the crook of his shoulder and stared through the window at the stars. Pinpricks of light suspended above the world for eons, connecting time and space, all the while inspiring generations of dreams and magic and hope. Let's promise to look at the stars each night and think of each other. Maybe even make a little wish, like, I hope Ian had fresh water today, or I hope Gentry gets more than 4 hours sleep tonight.
How like you to ask for miracles, he squeezed her as he smiled.
Her entire body responded. Every time you relax enough to joke, it feels like a home run. Better than that, a grand slam.
Thank you for bringing out a side of me that no one else ever has. I feel free here with you. His voice fell to something of a whisper.
I love that. He brushed a fallen piece of her hair behind her ear.
Me too.
Gentry had never said the words, I love you, to anyone outside of her family, and even within that group, she didn't say them often. As far as she'd been concerned, falling in love ranked up there with swimming in a tank of sharks, and making that exclamation would be like tossing chum in the water. Chances of survival? Almost nil. No man had inspired her to take that risk until now, but even so, she'd never say it first. She'd heard about lightning strike love stories, like with Hunter and Sarah. Was this how they'd felt, or were they more certain? She wished someone would invent a love meter, like a mood ring that turned a certain color when two people felt the same way about each other. A clear sign that it wasn't one-sided, or wouldn't fall apart. Gentry believed herself to be in love. Worse, she wanted to shout it loud and clear because she sensed he needed to hear it almost as much as she wanted to say it. But for all of her bold moves in the past, she didn't dare utter those three words now, because if he didn't say them back, she'd be crushed. The piercing sound of her son's rousing cry emanated from the baby monitor in the living room. "I'll go," Ian said, easing out of bed. "You relax." "Thanks." Gentry rested her head on her fist and watched his gloriously nude body in motion. Long-limbed perfection. "You're welcome." He pulled his boxers on and left her alone. "Be back in a few." She rolled onto her stomach and stretched her limbs across the mattress, inhaling the scent of the pillow where Ian's head had lain. She decided then not to wash his sheets after he left. That way, when she missed him, she could come up here, lie on the bed, and remember. Looking again at the stars, she knew that her wish would be the same every night. "Keep Ian safe and bring him home to me." When Ian lifted Colt out of the bassinet, Colt gripped his finger and bounced his head off Ian's shoulder. The baby's face pinched as he whimpered. "You're too big for this little cradle, buddy." He grabbed Quackers and tucked it under his arm, like Colby said Gentry used to do. "Let's go get you something to fill your tummy." Ian padded along the hallway to the kitchen and managed to use his teeth and one hand to fill a bottle and slide it into the warmer while keeping Colt safely nestled against his chest. While they waited for the formula to heat, Ian caught himself stroking Colt's hair. He loved this child, who now trusted him completely, who recognized him and his voice. It shouldn't have surprised him that Smith had been smitten, nor should he resent the man for being protective of his son or wanting a shot at Gentry. But resent him he did. "If you really care about her happiness, you won't ask her to wait around." Shaking off the memory of Smith's interrogation, Ian removed the bottle from the warmer and fed Colt while he strolled through the living room. That first day, when Ian had arrived with his duffel and ass-backward assumptions about Gentry and her family, he couldn't have predicted how quickly and how completely his life would change. Incredibly, this palace felt like home. Everything about it had Gentry's eclectic stamp on it, from the elegant sleekness to the quirky artwork, like that abstract bronze flutist, to the feminine floral throw pillows in the otherwise starkly modern space. Original, like the woman herself. He smiled at Colt, thinking him lucky to have a mom like that. Ian wondered what life might have been like with a little bit of rebel influence guiding his outlook and choices. Who might he be now if he hadn't been brought up the Crawford way? Colt's saucer-wide eyes stared up at Ian, even as he sucked at the bottle's nipple with all his might. It seemed as if the kid had grown 6 inches in mere weeks. In a few months, Colt would be crawling, maybe even pulling himself up onto 2 feet. "Who will you become, little man? Will you take after your uncle Hunter and become a businessman? Will you have more of a free spirit like your mom? Will you be a charmer like your dad? Will you remember me?" As soon as he voiced those words, he stopped himself. Or, more honestly, the rest of his questions lodged in his throat and made it impossible for him to speak. It hurt to think, to know,
that the likelihood of being in the picture a year or two from now was slim. Not because he didn't want to be, but because he'd been around enough to know that wishing for something wasn't enough. Choices mattered. Commitments counted. And now, Ian was confronted with a bunch of important choices, some of which seemed decidedly against him, and some of which would define his character. Before he'd met Gentry, he'd made a promise to Archer and to his dad's memory. What kind of man would he be if he walked away after others had committed time and money to their venture? After he'd pitched Marcus Fairfax and gotten that man's son involved? He'd already failed to live up to the commitment he'd made to Farah. Did he want his legacy to become a string of broken promises? His heart might yearn to stay here, but he'd never made any promise to Gentry. If he failed to finish what he'd started in Haiti, he'd lose his self-respect. Colt finished the bottle in record time, so Ian burped him and changed his diaper before bringing him upstairs to sleep in his crib for the first time. He laid him on the larger mattress, surrounded by padded railings, then tucked Quackers in the corner beneath Colt's feet. Ian accidentally bumped the plush mobile overhead, which caused Colt to pump his tiny arms and legs. Ian wound the mobile, which then rotated while playing the lullaby song. He stared at Colt, who deserved more than the threadbare mascot of love Gentry had clung to as a child. He needed focused love and attention to thrive. He needed a reliable, familiar, steady support system. What Colt didn't need was a man who'd be even less present than Ian's own father had been, who'd miss out on more of his young life than he'd ever see, who'd leave all the hard work of parenting to Gentry instead of being there with her, regularly sharing the burden and the joy. Smith had been right. Ian shouldn't stand in the way of a relationship that Gentry might have with any man who could give her the kind of family life she deserved. The kind he knew, deep down, she and Colt needed. All evening, he'd been thinking only about himself and what he stood to lose, not what Gentry might be passing up. For all her feigned nonchalance, what Gentry needed most was the security of abiding love. Colt would flourish more if his mother's needs were met. If Ian loved them both, he needed to be strong enough to step out of the picture and let Smith or someone else step in. "You look morose. Do you hate Brahms?" Gentry surprised him from behind, then bent over the crib and touched her son, whispering, "He looks so tiny in this crib." "He's too big for the bassinet now." Ian's throat ached. "Time to move him."
"I'm not ready."
Gentry laid one hand on Ian's shoulder, but her gaze remained lovingly on her son.
"We have to do what's right when it counts. Not when it suits us."
"It's hard to let go. I like having him close."
She smiled at Ian in a way that acknowledged an, "I'm pathetic, aren't I?" clarity. The pain of his own clarity struck him with surprising force. It would be tough to follow his own advice, but he had to if he wanted to be a better man than his father.
"Gentry, I'm leaving for Haiti in a few days."
Her lips parted slightly.
"You have enough money already?"
"Farah's ring will give me enough to return and get set up. Archer's been on me about losing momentum with the alliances we'd been building. Fairfax's son is ready to fly out. It's time for me to go."
"Do you already have your ticket?"
Her eyes glistened. He shook his head.
She twisted her arms around her waist like she might feel sick. What happened in the last 10 minutes to make this so urgent?
He glanced down at Colt, whose eyelids had begun to droop as he drifted off to sleep. Ian had spent his life helping to repair broken families all around the globe. Yet somehow, for a little while, he'd fooled himself into thinking he could stand in the way of one that could become whole.
Let's go talk in my room.
Gentry kissed her finger and pressed it to Colt's forehead before walking out of the nursery ahead of Ian. She plopped onto the edge of the mattress, arms crossed, expression hot. What's going on?
This has nothing to do with my feelings for you.
Oh, brother, that's a line of bull if I ever heard it, Ian. Her mouth fell into a grim line, and that chin began its slow, proud rise.
It's not, he sat beside her. Not long ago, you suggested we were both sort of footnotes in our parents' lives. I didn't agree before, but now I see some truth to it.
What's that got to do with you leaving?
Every day we pretend this can work, that we're some kind of family. It only makes it harder to accept the facts.
What facts? He clasped her hand, turning it over in his.
We've told some pretty lies to ourselves to justify taking what we wanted. The truth is that I'm not Colt's dad. Smith is. I'm not going to be in this country, let alone this time zone, for most of the next year or longer. Smith is. I'm not the guy with whom you should be trying to build Colt's family. Smith is. I can't ask you to wait for me. It's not fair to you or your son.
Did I just land on the go directly to jail square in Monopoly? How are we right back to where things started before we got together?
We're not where we started. He squeezed her hand. I wish I could go back there and have had enough self-control to avoid getting here where we both hurt. I did this to you and to myself. If I were the only one who'd have to pay the price down the road for rolling the dice, that might be okay. But I'm not. The last thing I want is to hurt you. But it's better to hurt a little now, when there's time for you to start things off with Smith on a strong foot, than for me to hang on and mess things up and still end up like I did with Farah.
I'm not Farah. Why can't you see that?
I know you're not Farah. But she also didn't have a son.
He looked through the door toward the nursery.
Look me in the eye and tell me that you want an absentee father figure for Colt.
Her gaze dropped to her feet for a moment, and so did her tone. So, now I'm supposed to swap you for Smith. It doesn't work that way, you know.
I know. But with me clearly out of the picture, it'll smooth the way for a better relationship with Smith. He's got to be feeling territorial about his son.
Gentry's eyes narrowed. Did he say something to you?
If I were any kind of man, he shouldn't have to. And if you're being completely honest, you'll admit that you want more than I can offer. At least she didn't lie.
This would be a real goodbye, and that ache settled in his chest like banked embers, turning his lungs to ash. He kissed her temple.
The jealous part of me wishes Smith were a bad guy, but he isn't. It's wonderful for Colt that his dad is coming into his life, and that Smith's family will embrace you both. If there's even a slight chance that the three of you could be a real family, that's as good of a reason as any
for me to step aside. She yanked her hand free.
I hate that everyone else always thinks they know what's best for me.
I'm not telling you anything you haven't basically told me yourself since we first met. This is Colt's shot at the kind of family neither of us ever had.
We could give him one if you stay here.
She reached for him, but he kept his hands tucked beneath his armpits.
Colt can have two fathers?
He shook his head. You're putting too much faith in me, Gentry. The other night I was listening to Farrah cry about broken plans and missing me, but the whole time I was thinking of you. What does my moving on so easily say about me?
It says Farrah wasn't the right woman.
Or maybe the reason I globetrot is because, like it or not, I'm like my dad, and my life will be a series of ins and outs, here and gones. That's all I know, and I'm not so sure I'd be good at staying put, even if that appeals to me right now. Gentry shot off the mattress.
Fine then, sell the ring, buy your ticket, and go save the world.
Gentry.
Don't. Let me deal with this.
She motioned her hands in circles in front of him.
My way. Sorry if I'm not contained like you. This is how I process. I let it out, and usually not in the healthiest way. So, since you're here and all at peace, I'm going out for a bit while you watch Colt. Okay?
He stared at her. Red hair flowing, eyes lit with frustration, body fidgeting and eager to run. Where will you go? She glared at him, eyes burning bright.
In a couple of days, you won't know what I'm doing or who I'm doing it with, so get used to it.
She stormed out of his room like a charging bull. When she left, all the energy and light in the room went with her. He'd made his choice. Now he'd need to keep his word. Chapter 19.
Conflagration. According to Merriam-Webster, a large, disastrous fire. According to me, Ian's decision.
Gentry raced her car along the lakeside road, hugging the center line throughout the roadway's twists and turns. She imagined her car looking like a cartoon sketch with swirls of leaves and smoke funneling in its wake. Colby would still be at the restaurant, and Gentry's mom would be the last person to encourage her to change Ian's mind or to offer comfort. Sarah might be her best hope. She liked Ian. She'd also understand Gentry's feelings. After all, Sarah had followed her heart from a young age to be with Hunter. Gentry practically dive-bombed Hunter's driveway, only then thinking to call and warn them of her arrival. It was Saturday night. Given Hunter's and Sarah's tendencies toward tradition and schedules, an unannounced 9:30 drop-in might be quite ill-timed.
Sis, what's up?
Hunter's voice sounded relaxed, not strained. A relief. Perhaps she'd caught them before they'd disrobed.
I'm in your driveway. She sucked the blood from her torn thumbnail. Can I come in?
Everything okay?
She scowled at the media screen of her dashboard, as if he could see her, and snapped.
Would I be here if it were?
If she guessed right, he'd probably yanked the phone away from his head and frowned at it.
Come on in.
She slung her purse over her shoulder and exited the car. By the time she hit the porch, Hunter had opened the front door.
Did something happen with Smith after we left?
He might have just tried to hug her, but she was too intent on storming the entry to be sure.
No.
I need to talk to Sarah.
And then, upon seeing his perturbed expression, she added,
And you too, if you want. Warning, it's girl stuff. About Ian.
So, not Smith.
Hunter crossed his arms, his brows rising above the rims of his glasses. In a way, she supposed it was about Smith, too.
Gah.
She still had to see him tomorrow before he left, too.
Not directly.
Hunter slung his arm over her shoulder and began walking her toward the family room. Hunter reserved most of his affection for Sarah and Ty, and sometimes Colby. Gentry had rarely been on the receiving end of his demonstrative side, although, since she'd started working with him, he'd been better. Still, his affection was like an ice cream cone in winter, a treat, but somehow off. Sarah set aside A Parent's Guide to Developmental Delays when Gentry entered the room. She tucked her feet under her butt and patted the sofa cushion beside her.
What's happened?
Gentry flopped herself onto the sofa, which triggered memories of the short time she'd lived here during the earliest weeks of her pregnancy. She'd been self-centered then, and as much as she liked to think that she'd matured, right now, she had her doubts. She could have given Colt all the stability he'd ever need if she'd simply handed him over to Hunter and Sarah, like she'd promised. Instead, she'd kept him. Now, she was still looking to have it all, her son, his father, and her lover.
Ian's going to Haiti.
Sarah and Hunter exchanged one of those secret message looks that long-married couples share. Once they finished their telepathy, Sarah turned her gentle blue eyes back on Gentry. She reached across the cushions and touched Gentry's calf, looking at her the way she'd seen Sarah look at Ty when trying to teach him something.
Wasn't that always his plan?
Gentry sat up, as if singed, and then hugged a throw pillow.
Yes, but...
You thought you could change his mind with the right...
motivation?
Sarah ventured, at which point Hunter covered his ears, his face pinched in a way that silently shouted, TMI. He opened his eyes, still shaking his head to clear out the image.
I'll need some wine.
He scurried to the kitchen to avoid hearing whatever Sarah and Gentry might say next.
I'm not stupid,
Gentry insisted, despite the fact of her being there with this complaint, proving quite the contrary.
I didn't think I'd keep him from leaving. I just didn't think it'd be so sudden or so final.
Ah. Sarah tugged the small blanket over her knees.
Perhaps Smith's arrival nudged him along.
Hunter returned with some glasses and an open bottle of Cabernet, which he proceeded to pour, giving himself the largest glass. He sat on the arm of the sofa nearest his wife and stared at Gentry. She knew he meant to be supportive, but he had a way of making her feel interrogated.
Smith didn't help things, that's for sure.
She focused on Sarah, who'd repositioned herself to face Gentry more directly.
My mom's pushing me to make us a real family, so I don't have to share custody. Apparently, now Ian agrees. It's like he doesn't even care.
He cares.
Hunter chugged a bit of his wine. Gentry shot him a questioning look, doubting Ian had confided anything in her brother.
I watched him during dinner. He bristled any time Smith opened his mouth. But his hands are tied, Gentry.
Hunter tugged one foot across the opposite knee.
Biology aside, Ian's got his plans. You and I already discussed why that drive isn't going anywhere.
What are you talking about? Sarah asked him. Gentry waved a hand in the air. Ian's insane commitment to building an EMT training center in Jacmel.
Why do you think it's insane? Sarah pressed.
Gentry set down her glass so she could tick her fingers. Because the living conditions sound abysmal. Because he could get kidnapped? Because the money and supplies and expertise together isn't the same as keeping them in play year after year. And most importantly, because I don't think this is his dream. He's giving up a chance at happiness here in order to chase a ghost.
Careful, sis. Given some of our family's issues, I get why you might question Ian's motive. But his family was intact. He's an only child. He's got a real interest in keeping his father's memory and name alive. That's powerful stuff.
Why can't he do it like a normal person? Get married, have kids, do good works around here.
Gentry grabbed her wine, a bit too hard, so it sloshed over the rim.
Maybe what makes him so appealing to you is that he isn't normal. Sarah smoothed the blanket, her voice soft but knowing.
You never did like anyone or anything traditional.
Leave it to Sarah to stop Gentry's rant cold. Some truths could not be denied.
Let's step back a second and talk about Smith.
Hunter leaned forward to set his now empty glass on the coffee table.
You two were joking around like old buddies tonight. He got along well with everyone, including your mom. Is there any chance that you two might turn co-parenting into something more?
Oh, God, Hunter. Gentry slapped her forehead. If you agree with my mom, we all better head underground because the apocalypse is nigh.
I'm not suggesting you force it, but it would be convenient if it worked out, wouldn't it?
He crossed his arms with a shrug. Gentry wrinkled her nose.
I can't go there mentally. I like the way things are now with Ian.
I'm in love, you fools. Can't you tell? Don't I look different?
But he's leaving.
Sarah folded her hands in her lap.
I know that. It's why I'm here. I need advice, not a blow-by-blow of the obvious.
She leaned forward, elbows on her knees, and buried her head in her hands.
Sorry. I'm a wreck.
Do you honestly want my advice? Sarah asked, unfazed by Gentry's mood. Gentry and Hunter both stared at Sarah, and Gentry swallowed her dread.
Yes, please.
Do you care about Ian? Maybe even love him a little? Sarah leaned closer now.
Love. Yes, now you see. Now we're on the right track.
Cold sweat broke out along Gentry's hairline and forearms. She couldn't quite handle this much intimacy filling the space between them, so she nodded, eyes downcast.
Then, let him go.
Gentry shivered from the ice water effect of Sarah's words.
Still, Sarah continued.
Guilt or manipulation won't make him care more, and either one could backfire. And even if you succeed in convincing him to stay, he'd end up wrestling with doubts about that choice forever. Find the grace to let him go with love. What's meant to be will be, Gentry. Have faith in that, and in yourself.
Hunter laid his hand on Sarah's shoulder and kissed her head. She knows what she's talking about. I almost lost everything before I figured out that I couldn't control fate. I can only control myself.
Then he grinned like an imp, unusual for him.
Not that I still don't sometimes think
The world would be better off if I could control everything.
Sarah chuckled, stretching up to pat his cheek. More efficient, maybe, but not necessarily better.
Gentry chugged at what remained of her wine, mulling over Sarah's so-called wisdom. Adulting sucked. Life before Colt had been simple. Gentry missed the freedom to run off, rant, make mistakes, and generally start fresh every morning. Now, she had to be accountable. Her decisions all affected her son. Her reputation mattered because it would affect him, too. Losing Ian before they'd had time to cement their relationship was a cruel joke. Who needed to feel this way? Maybe her mother was right. A pragmatic relationship with a relaxed, easy-on-the-eyes man like Smith would never hurt this much. It could be comfortable and fun, and provide Colt with stability. And everyone, including Ian and her, agreed that Colt should be the priority. Smith wouldn't be killed or kidnapped on the job. They'd have an endless supply of good wine, clean water, and laughter. Her son could have his father in his life on a regular basis. Would that all be better in the long run?
Gentry, Hunter asked.
Hmm?
The effect of the wine wound its way through her limbs.
I have one last suggestion.
He looked so serious, her stomach dropped.
Hit me.
Gentry held her breath.
Focus on Colt and work, and let everything else sort itself out. We need you to be on top of your end of the marketing campaign. The launch is literally around the corner. Its success or failure will have a huge impact on our kids' lives, too.
Work. She'd let that fall to the bottom of her to-do list. Unlike Hunter and Ian, she didn't consider her job a legacy. It didn't give her a sense of identity. Her photography and blog better represented who she was and what mattered to her. But that seemed frivolous. Maybe that's, in essence, who or what she still was, despite months of trying to be more. Frivolous. No wonder Ian was leaving, like she'd always known he would. 2 hours ago, she'd been optimistic. Now everything seemed upside down and inside out. She looked at her brother and Sarah. They had it all, professional drive and respect, a lovely family and home, confidence and security, everything she wanted.
I'm going to do exactly what you say. I've got all afternoon tomorrow to address what I didn't quite finish last week. Monday morning, I'll hit the ground running. If Ian can walk away so easily, then he isn't worth waiting for anyhow.
That sounded more convincing than it felt, but she'd always subscribed to the fake it till you make it theory.
Newly determined, Gentry stood. Sorry to drop in unexpectedly, but thanks for listening. I'll be seeing Smith off in the morning. What did you all think of him, by the way?
Very amiable, Sarah nodded, although her glum expression proved that she empathized with Gentry's struggle.
He handled himself well under the circumstances, and he's not holding a grudge, which means he's more than fair.
Hunter nodded thoughtfully.
He could be good for you and Colt.
In any case, you'll have help with parenting now, which is huge.
Not as huge as having Ian's help, but still, in the long run, who knew?
Who knew anything, really?
All things considered, I lucked out with Smith's attitude. I guess I'll be getting on a plane soon to take Colt to meet his family. I wonder what they'll think of me.
Gentry picked up her empty glass to take it to the kitchen.
Depends on your mood. And your outfit, Hunter teased.
His comment was met with a gentle backhand from Sarah.
She knows I'm kidding.
Sort of. Just for that, you can put this in the dishwasher for me. Gentry handed Hunter her glass.
I'm out of here.
She kissed him goodbye and returned to her car. Thousands of stars lit up the black sky, as if the whole galaxy had shown up for a concert. An hour ago, those stars had promised a connection to Ian, but now they were nothing more than a reminder of a magnificent dream that hadn't come true.
Are you sure you don't want to join me at the diner for lunch?
Ian's mother asked as they exited church.
Not today.
He squinted into the sunlight, watching dozens of parents wrangle kids into their cars. Families bound for baseball games or birthday parties. Last night, after Gentry had run off to cool down, Ian had sat in the nursery, staring at Colt and thinking about his life. Before Gentry returned, he'd gone back to his room. From there, he heard her check on Colt, but she didn't come to Ian, and he didn't push himself on her. This morning, she'd been quiet and polite, resolved to accept his decision. He'd left the house before Smith arrived, mostly because he didn't want to see that guy again. It had been hard enough to let go of Gentry, and harder to suggest that she be open to a relationship with Smith. He didn't need to torture himself by standing on the sidelines to watch it happen. His mother squeezed his arm.
I've never known you to pass up apple pie.
I'm not good company today.
He'd barely mustered the energy to shave. Not even the thought of fries and pie made him happy.
You're usually riding a high before you take off for Haiti.
Her tone held no judgment, only a question.
I know.
He let out a sigh, wishing he could be carried away with that breath. His mother's eyes looked older today, tired, even a little sad.
Care to tell me why you aren't more excited?
He patted her arm and kissed her cheek.
Not at the moment, Mom. My flight leaves in 42 hours. I'll swing by to say goodbye before I go. Right now, I need some space.
She wrapped him in a hug. He held her and rested his cheek on her head.
I love you, Ian, she said,
her voice slightly muffled by his body.
You are your father's son, a man with a heart bigger than the earth itself. I'm proud of you, and I know your father would be, too.
His nose tingled, but he didn't cry. He didn't do anything other than give his mom an extra tight squeeze and choke out a thank you. A month ago, that sentiment would have fed his pride. This morning, he was too aware that being like his father might not be quite as wonderful as he'd always thought. He released her and walked her to her car.
Don't you want to ride?
She asked, when he didn't walk to the passenger side.
I think I'll walk a bit.
You can't walk to Lake Sandy from here.
He'd walked a lot farther and under more harsh conditions in his life.
I'll figure it out, Mom.
She nodded, taking the hint.
I'll take you to the airport on Tuesday. Let me know what time to pick you up.
I can grab an Uber.
She went still, her eyes growing misty.
Ian, when you go off to these places, I never know if it's the last time I'll see you.
Let me take you to the airport.
He stared at her, having never given any thought to the stress his choices forced on his mother. She'd already lost a husband to Haiti, and Ian was her only child.
God, he could be stupid.
Of course, Mom. But you don't have to worry about me. I'm careful.
So had his father been, until he hadn't. Of course, people died every day in every imaginable way. Bizarre accidents and terrible violence occurred around the corner just as often as they did around the world. He wouldn't live his life in fear of danger that might happen. Having goals, experiencing new things, being grateful. Those made for a good life, no matter how long it lasted. He kissed his mother's cheek and then closed her car door once she was seated behind the wheel. After she drove away, he walked back into the now empty church and sat in a pew. Eyes closed, head bent, he sought reassurance about the path he'd chosen. He sought strength to be able to do the right thing for Gentry, Colt, and those he, Stanley, and Archer hoped to help. He sought peace, too. But that one eluded him. Tuesday morning, Ian rose before the sun and packed his duffel. He gathered his towels for the laundry. Before leaving the room, he stood in its center, committing its details to memory. Not just the color of the paint or the shimmer of the gauze curtain, but the memories it held. The first impression he'd had, the first time Gentry had kissed him, the restless nights he'd spent fighting his feelings for her, the afternoon he'd fallen asleep with Colt in his bed. A lifetime lived out in less than a month. He wished things had been warmer between Gentry and him these past 2 days, but he respected her need for distance. Last night, he'd almost gone to her room to satisfy the overwhelming need to be close to her, but that would have been another mistake and made things even harder today. He left his things in the hallway and crept into Colt's dark room. Babies looked angelic in their sleep, arms overhead, faces turned to one side, features relaxed and peaceful. For Colt, that was a rarity. Colt's slumber gave Ian an excuse to remain silent. Not that he could have found the words to describe the difficulty of leaving this young child behind, or the hopes he had for Colt's future. Ian had saved many lives, befriended and assisted many children, but nothing compared with the awesome responsibility of having an infant depend on him for everything day after day, or seeing those dark blue eyes drinking in every new experience, or feeling the trusting weight of this baby against his chest each day. These past several weeks had given him a taste of fatherhood. Some days he'd caught himself projecting ahead, thinking about whether Colt would like baseball or football, whether he'd be a good student, whether he'd be artistic. In those daydreams, Ian had been there by Colt's side, at a game or recital or spelling bee. Fanciful notions that came from a corner of his soul Ian had never explored. He pressed the heels of his palms against his wet eyes and whispered, "Love you," before walking away and closing the nursery door. His mother would be arriving in 15 minutes to whisk him off to the airport. He heaved his duffel over one shoulder and gathered the towels. When he got down to the living room, he found Gentry in her robe, seated on the sofa, hair pinned up in some knot. It reminded him a bit of the first time he'd shown up here, when she'd been in that same robe, frazzled and overwhelmed. "Good morning," she stood, hands buried in her robe's pockets. The first hint of sun peeked through the trees behind her, glinting off the gold highlights in her red hair. "Good morning." Ian set the duffel on the floor and placed the bundle of linens on the sofa. "Didn't expect to see you this early." "Thought you'd make a clean getaway, did you?" Her sly smile popped into place for a flash. Then she dropped her gaze to the ground. Within another second, she recovered and raised her chin.
I plan to leave a note.
Ian took a few steps closer.
You've been quiet these past 2 days. I wanted to respect your space.
She nodded, blinking as if to stave off tears, and attempted another smile. I've been thinking a lot, so it's no wonder if you've been confused. Whenever she derided herself, it cut him up. He wanted to hold her, but he didn't think it'd be welcome.
I like your spontaneity. I hope this change isn't permanent.
Gentry shrugged. I'd hoped to find brilliant words, or at least eloquent ones, to sum up all of my feelings. But I'm not Sarah or Colby. I'm not good at it. So you're stuck settling for this. She walked to him, pulling quackers out of her pocket. He frowned, puzzled, as he looked at the matted toy she held out.
And what exactly can he say to me that you can't?
Everything. She pushed the plush toy to his chest. I want you to have him, Ian. He's pretty good company when you feel alone. Her voice was strained now, so she forced him to take hold of the duck and then dropped her arms. He trembled. Of all the expensive and extravagant things Gentry owned, Quackers was, by far, her most precious. He thrust it back at her.
I can't take this, Gentry. It means so much to you.
20+ years of love, to be precise. She shook her head. Please take him. I want you to have him. I want you to know. Just that. Just no.
His phone pinged.
No doubt his mother was outside in her car, waiting to drive him to the airport.
He cursed under his breath.
Gentry sucked her lips inward, biting down hard to keep from speaking or crying or both. Unable to resist any longer, he grabbed her into a hug and squeezed her so tight she coughed.
If I didn't love you, this would be much easier, he said, right before he kissed her.
He cupped her wet cheeks, and she wiped at his as he stared into her eyes.
Be happy. Don't doubt yourself. Don't settle for less than you want. And don't forget to wish on those stars, Gentry.
She sniffled and kissed him again, then pushed him away and touched her fingers to her mouth. Don't take this wrong, but I'm going to try to forget all about you, Ian Crawford.
She would, too. Of that, he was sure.
She'd spent a lifetime building that defense mechanism, and he could hardly begrudge her what she needed in order to ease her pain. His phone pinged again.
I have to go.
I know. Her chin wobbled, and a few new tears fell from her eyes. She followed him to the door. He'd gotten a few steps down the walkway when he heard her call out, I love you too. He stopped and looked over his shoulder. The joy from hearing that declaration became muted by guilt. He'd encouraged her feelings for him, even though he knew what it would cost her. A terrible thing to do to a person, especially to one with so little faith in love. Shame cascaded over him, killing any temptation he might have otherwise had to drop his duffel and run back for another kiss.
Goodbye, Gentry.
He watched her nod and swallow whatever words were stuck in her throat. She stepped backward and closed the door between them. His body ached, but he forced his legs to carry him to the car. His mother didn't say anything until they'd merged onto I-5 North. It's not easy, is it? He stared at the pavement ahead, a luxury not found in